Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. You can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Yesterday, we were talking about the Oakland A's and their reverse boycott. And how they got 28,000 people to go to a game against Tampa Bay in support of the team, to try to get the owner, John Fisher, to sell the team and to keep them in Oakland, even though there's it was very unlikely that that was going to happen. But no, the Nevada Senate voted to approve a bill that would build a new stadium in Las Vegas, and the governor is expected to sign it so that the city of Las Vegas will now have three of the four or five professional sports teams that are in this country. And they did so because this is the power that leagues have. Most all of us are in favor of owners building their own stadiums. Most of us don't like public money being used for stadiums. I can't say everybody, but most of us don't. But it is a power play that these leagues have over the public because they can, because they have a product that you love and you want. If you are a city like Las Vegas, what puts you on the map? Right, you can have great destinations, you can have a great gambling casinos, and you could be known for something, but sports is a big draw to your city. When you get professional sports, it adds to the community, it adds to community pride. There's something about having professional teams that makes a city more attractive. Plus, you can get a Super Bowl if you have an NFL team. You can have an NBA All-Star game in Las Vegas without an NBA team. But you can also have the Major League Baseball All-Star game. There's multiple things that you can do in a city when you have professional sports. The owners know this. And so the owners don't have a problem is pitting city against city, legislator against legislator, because they know in the end that no mayor of a city or governor of a state wants to be on duty the moment an owner says, I'm packing up and leaving. If you've not been able to do everything possible to keep that team, it's almost an absolute no-brainer that the fans are going to blame you when that team leaves. So nobody wants to do it. So in the end, that's why these public-funded stadiums end up getting built. Now, sometimes they don't, and the team just goes, yeah, no problem, we'll build it with private funds. But if you can get the public to build it, you get the public to build it. And a lot of times you get all the benefits, like you get the parking, for example, on land you don't technically own, right? I mean, all of those things, because it's part of the sweetheart deal. Don't move the team. Even if you are a team like, let's say, the Denver Broncos, and you're never going to go anywhere because you're the Denver Broncos and you're rich in tradition and you've been there forever, you can still play a flex move if you want, if you ever want public money. And that's what we're seeing in Oakland. There was no really good place to build a new stadium. But even if they found one, and there were a couple of places, Howard Terminal, right, or rebuild the Coliseum, or whatever it was, none of it satisfied John Fisher. What he wanted to do was just simply move it. He wanted to play in a stadium where it was going to be state-of-the-art and new, and he wanted to tap in to a fan base that was going to at least give him a honeymoon period while he runs a team with a very minimal payroll and doesn't pay anybody. Now, who is John Fisher? Well, he owns the A's, but he didn't. He became majority owner of the A's in 2015. So he was part of this A's, but he wasn't the guy in the movie, right, that Billy Beane talked to. Billy Beane, by the way, is also a minority owner of the A's. And so now they're going to be moving to Vegas. And the city of Oakland has lost three of their professional teams. I have never seen this in my lifetime, and I don't think I'll ever see it ever, where a city has been completely decimated of its sports identity. The Golden State Warriors moved to San Francisco. The Raiders and A's have moved to Las Vegas. That was a city that had not – here's the thing. They not only had two franchises that had won championships, they had two pretty iconic franchises in depending on your era, whether it's the 1970s A's or whether it was the 80-90s A's of the Bash Brothers. And then the Raiders are just one of the more iconic brands in all of sports. And now the city has lost both of them. I remember when the Raiders left Oakland the first time and moved to Los Angeles. And I remember, like, I was young. I was kind of a kid. I didn't really understand the politics of it all. I just knew that this owner just picked up and left. And I had seen teams kind of move before, and I've heard of teams moving before in the old days. But I remember how it ripped the city apart. And, of course, I was kind of devouring Sports Illustrated as a kid. And I remember reading the story about it, how it just destroyed the city to lose the Raiders when they moved to L.A. And then it hurt them even more when they won a Super Bowl with Marcus Allen. They won Super Bowl 18, beating Washington. And when they went back, you felt like there was something right in the sports universe, that the Raiders were going back to Oakland, where they belonged in the first place. And now they're in Las Vegas. And there's nothing wrong with Las Vegas. It's a great city. They just won a Stanley Cup. It's an up-and-coming city. It's been a city that has been devoid of professional teams for a long time because of what the city symbolizes. And now it's completely changed. The opinion of that industry has changed. The embracement of that industry has now changed. By the way, I just saw on Twitter that Vermont has now allowed has passed legalized betting. So now all of the New England states, you can now gamble on sports. It's happening everywhere. It'll soon be in all 50 states. Eventually, it'll be in all 50 states. And so the embracement of what was once sort of taboo over there, you know, let people do that on their vacation, but we're not embracing it as a legitimate daily thing. Well, now everybody's kind of changed their tune on it, right? And of course, that brings a more acceptance into what Las Vegas is as a city rather than a tourist destination. Right, I'm old enough to remember when the Orlando Magic were being, were being put together as a franchise, and people were like, "Well, yeah, I mean, what is Orlando? It's a bunch of amusement parks and Disney World, right?" But it was also a city. It had companies, it had businesses, and so you that's who you have to tap into when you're a sports franchise. You have to tap into the local businesses. A lot of the stuff you get is national, but a lot of the stuff you get is local. You need to be in tune with the local businesses, signage, things like that, everything that you're going to need on a local basis. And Vegas has that in droves. So it's the breakdown of the A's has a lot to do with a very, very cheap owner who, again, he'll probably bring this same cheapness to Las Vegas. He'll probably bring this same thought process, which is you ain't going to see superstars here. Now, the idea is that maybe he will. Maybe he's a guy that changes his tune and says, you know what? I couldn't draw anybody because I couldn't put out a product on the field, but I couldn't put a product on the field that was good because I couldn't draw anybody, like this whole catch-22 situation. But maybe he just goes, look, as soon as we get there, I get this brand new stadium. Everyone's going to be excited about it. It's going to be the hottest ticket in town. Everyone's going to want to go to baseball games because it's something brand new. So I'm going to be able to make a ton of money the initial honeymoon period of moving into this city. When I'm done, when I see it, I'll start maybe paying some players better. Maybe I'll keep them. That's the thought process. But he is the anti-Steve Cohen, right? Steve Cohen is a guy, a billionaire who bought the Mets, loves the Mets, wants the Mets to win, went out and got every player that he could, paid for every player. It's backfiring big time now. But that's his mindset is, I'm a billionaire that can have anything I want at any moment I want, but the only thing I can't buy is a championship. I have to earn it. How do I earn it? Well, my thought process is go get everybody I can. Sign everybody I possibly can. We're going to make this Mets team a juggernaut. John Fisher is the exact opposite. He owns this product in a very, very exclusive club. He's one of the richest men in the nation, but at the same time, he doesn't want to spend a nickel on it. He doesn't want to put any of his money into it. He doesn't want to pay a guy $250 million, $300 million, $350 million. He's not doing that. So if you are a prospect that's coming up in the A's organization as any baseball talent, once you start being a very, very productive A, you are very likely to be shipped somewhere else, right? Remember Kyler Murray was in the A's organization before he chose football?
Yep.
Remember that? If he had any baseball talent, he'd probably be playing for somebody else, right?
Yes.
If he had showed serious baseball skills, John Fisher probably would have shipped him somewhere else by now.
Or maybe he'd be packing his bags for Vegas right now.
Maybe so, right? So in that world, and by the way, Rob Manfred didn't do anything. Rob Manfred did reminded me of David Stern with the Seattle Supersonics. When the Seattle Supersonics were, holy cow, the owner could move the team. David Stern was like, yeah, well, what are you going to do? Like, instead of David Stern going, hey, we love the city of Seattle. We've had a rich history with the city of Seattle. We're not gonna give up on the city of Seattle. We're gonna work to try to keep the Supersonics there. He's like, hey, Clay Bennett owns it. What are we gonna do? Right? Rob Manfred's doing the exact same thing. He's not standing up for the people of Oakland. Why would he? He's standing up for the owners. The owners certainly want Oakland to move. Are you kidding me? Of course they do. There's a bottom line here that we're talking about. And here's the thing. Manfred is when you're talking about putting pressure on cities, that's what the commissioner of your sport has to do. Right? That is what the commissioner has to do. Right? He has to go into the owners and go, "Hey guys, this is not looking good. I know that John has been working hard to get this or that, but we can't just let him move to Las Vegas." I ain't going to do that. No. When you're a fan, you don't have a friend in the commissioner. The commissioner is the friend of the people who are doing business with him and pay his salary. So when I hear people say, look, Rob Manfred didn't do anything for the people of Oakland, his job isn't to do anything for the people of Oakland. And that is too bad. And that's kind of sad. But that's just the way that business works.
You know, right? What's funny? I think over time, and it may be a generational thing, where people forget what the commissioner actually does.
Yeah, it's so true. It is so true. You sometimes have to remind people of this.
Yeah, they feel like he's the policeman of everything in that sport. Yeah, in a way he is, except he doesn't have authority over the owners.
Yeah, name me an owner and I'm sure you could find one if you really look, but name me an owner that said, this will not stand. I will not allow you to move this team. They all end up moving.
Yeah.
They all end up going somewhere else. They all end up, and if they don't, it's because they, behind the scenes, the commissioner is pressuring city councils to get these votes done, to get you to make sure that you're keeping the Bills in Buffalo, or you're keeping the, you know, whatever it may be, you're keeping the team there.
Heart failure, and often here.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. Thanks for joining us. We continue with Wake Up Call. All right, we give you the good, the bad, and the dumb on a throwback Thursday, 2008, by the way. Tiger Woods on the final round birdies the 18th hole and gets in a playoff to Rocco Media, and he would later win that U.S. Open. Then not win a major again until 2019. But that's our throwback Thursday. What is our good of the day?
That's a good throwback Thursday.
It is.
The good of the day is the first trailer dropped for the new Netflix documentary Quarterbacks.
Okay.
Premieres July 12th. And it literally is cameras following just three quarterbacks of the NFL. Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, and Mr. Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, so what is this, a behind the scenes thing, or
it's behind the scenes? It's them on the field, them being mic'd up during the games, and showing what home life is like for them, and interviewing their family members as well.
Okay, very cool.
It actually looks really entertaining.
These,
but of course, trailers always do, because
that's the job to sell this.
But it comes at a perfect time.
Well, it seems like we're getting more and more of these now. Like, more and more of these inside the looks. We're dropping cameras everywhere. We're getting film crews out. We're doing these. We're going to follow these people in their homes and their everyday life, and we're going to tell a story.
So, I find the three quarterbacks they chose to kind of be polarizing in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, well, obviously Mahomes, you know, Mahomes is Mahomes. I mean, he's probably the best quarterback in the league right now, Super Bowl champion once again. But the other two are interesting choices that I'm kind of excited to see what it's like.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
I'm really excited about Mariota, because I've always liked him. I wish he had a better career.
So this was when he played for the Falcons last year and just followed him around. That's cool.
That's good. And interviewing his wife, and you know, in the trailer, you do see the Mariota saying that he feels he's the one that always needs to make a play, which tends to get him in trouble.
When do you think an athlete, like Mariota, is still relatively young? Like, when do you think an athlete loses?
He just says, "That's it."
That confidence, is there a realization in Mariota's life? Like, you know, I'm not gonna be the main starter again. Like, I could still be in this league. I can be a backup. I can jump in when... But my days of being the guy on the billboards, the guy on the season ticket packages, the guy that's...
Doing all the radio hits.
Yeah, doing all the radio hits. Like, those days are over. Like, I'm not... I had my chance. I don't have my chance.
Companies
anymore.
Come to me for PR.
Right. Because I hear this in golf a lot with the U.S. Open. I hear this in golf where guys will say, look, I don't think I'm ever going to win a major. I don't think I have the game to win a major, but I have the game to make a good living doing this.
No, I mean, like, that's Rocco Media.
I can show up week in, yeah.
Rocco
I can show
immediate.
Up week in and week out. I can make cuts. I can make a very, very good living. I have millions of dollars a year. But do I see myself ever winning a Masters? No. I don't see myself winning. Like, some of these guys are honest, right? They're like, I know. I see other players, and I go, I don't have that. But I'm good enough to make $3 million a year.
I mean, Rocco, just bringing it to that point, Rocco, I was looking at it earlier. He's in the Championship Tour now?
Champions Tour.
He used to be the Senior PGA.
Right.
I mean, he's still playing there.
Yeah.
And so he's probably, he's still definitely making a living. But he never won a major. Second place was the highest finish he ever had in a major. I think the Masters, the highest he ever finished was top 20.
And then you'd also find guys that are like, no, I'm still good enough to be top dog quarterback.
Right.
I'm still a guy that I can start anywhere. You give me an opportunity, I'll show you. But then there's guys. I wonder if Mariota goes, hey, you know what? Find me another job that's better than backup quarterback. Where you don't have to do much. I'll take it. I'd rather be in the league at that than not be in the league at all. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's interesting because I think that's Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, right.
Because, I mean, there was a report coming out yesterday that he doesn't feel that he's going to get a contract extension from the Vikings.
Yeah.
And he probably won't.
Probably won't.
But, I mean, that's someone who has been the face of two franchises and, been the man, never really got it done. And now, we've always talked about how the NFL is just a cruel, cruel business. They're just going to look the other way. One of the things that was on this date in history that, sports history that, we always do on Throwback Thursday, I contemplated it, but it was Phil Simms getting cut.
That's right. Yeah.
Giants royalty and just like, man, we're done.
That's it. Yeah. It'll happen. It's a crazy business.
Yeah. There's no magical ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, think about the Vikings last year. What a season they had. An amazing season. And yet all these one-score games, they were pulling out all these one-score games. But everyone was like, ah. But then they lose to the Giants in the playoffs, and it's gone. It does not matter. Totally forgotten about. Daniel Jones is running for first downs, and that's all she wrote. That's it.
Yeah, and we immediately, the narrative quickly becomes, yeah, that's what we thought the Vikings were
pretty much.
They just got lucky in all those one-score games.
So I asked this question earlier because with Drive to Survive and now this full swing, we have it in Hard Knocks. Is there another sport that and they have a tennis one, too. I haven't seen the tennis one. There's a tennis one, too. Is there another sport where they go, let's do the camera in the locker room, follow them around, talk to the people behind the clothes? Is there
you could probably do that with any sport and there will be a following. I don't know how you would do it. Baseball would just, that would be annoying.
Yeah.
Cause at least like with football, once a week, you got a camera crew assembled,
right?
And then during the week you can, it was like showing Patrick Mahomes, like he was like on a, looked like a farm somewhere, or like maybe it was like a Halloween, a pumpkin patch. He's playing games with holding his kid and stuff like that. You can do that. Baseball, I don't think you can do that because you're constantly on the road unless you're showing the seedy side of life.
Well,
and then it becomes more like Temptation Island.
You're right about the you're right about the trailer, right? And Drive to Survive is a perfect example of this. Yeah, so we have this pandemic. Everyone's at home. People are looking for things to watch. They're going through. And then when they stumble on this race car show, the trailer was, literally in the trailer, they are showing massive crashes. And then there's a mother of the driver saying, I pray every single race. Like that was like the pull, right?
Yeah.
That was like the pull. Like, this is the most dangerous. Like, if you watch a Formula One race, you are very, very likely not to see a car flip over on its side. It can happen, and it has happened, but very unlikely that it will occur. Like, it doesn't happen every race. There isn't cars flying in the stands. There isn't any of that. Most of the time, that's not the case. But they sold the casual viewer who didn't know anything about it, like, hey, this looks dangerous. Look at that guy. He's flipping upside down. Like, right. he's on fire. Like, what is this? And so they watched it, and they got, you know, they got interested in the sport and the people behind it. And I wonder, you know, how much of that was, if that was not there, how many people would have clicked on it? How many people would have said, I don't like auto racing. Screw it. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Golf, the same way. It's like, I don't like golf.
Well, but you know, just mentioning like Full Swing is kind of remarkable to me because of they decided to do this golf show. And what happened the first season of the golf show? Live Tour.
Live Tour, yeah.
And then now we're in the second season of Full Swing. What's happening now? Now it's the merger.
Oh, I can't wait for Full Swing season two to come out.
Yeah, but you're just looking at it like, you know, you guys decided to do this right at the right time. I mean, right, if you had done this 3 years ago, 4 years ago, yeah, you know, maybe you're covering that there's a Tiger Woods crash. But I mean, so, this involves every golfer.
So quarterback is the name of this
quarterbacks.
Documentary.
All right, very yeah,
good. Quarterbacks.
And okay. I think it looks good. Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's what I said. I said I think they chose the right three quarterbacks, and maybe this is, you know, something they do. It's like, all right, well, this coming NFL season, maybe they're following another three.
I want more. I want more like preparation. Like I want more video of guys in the film room. Like,
no, that's what they show. The show actually in this trailer, you see all three of them studying film, and Patrick Mahomes going,
like,
we have a game plan one weekend, and then the next weekend is completely different, like a completely different set of plays and gameplay. I mean, it's like, you know, you think about that, it's like, God, that's remarkable to think, like, if you're creating new plays.
I saw a clip of Greg Schiano talking about the difference between coaching and professional. You know, he's talking, and you hear this a lot with college coaches who go to the NFL, and they kind of come back and they go, I didn't realize how much of a business it was. But he said that he was at Rutgers, he was doing all this stuff, rah, rah, rah stuff. And he got to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and he was doing all of that. And he got a veteran player said, Coach, nobody's here for life lessons. Nobody's here to be a good father, a good husband. This is a job. If you could just keep it like that, that'll be great. Because he didn't know how he goes, I'm not communicating with my guys. And veteran player flat out told him. And he goes, and this guy came up to me and he just flat out told me what it was. He goes, guys don't want to hear about being good dads and good fathers. And he's like, they just want you to coach them to wins. That's all they care about. Let them do their own thing, but that's they're here for their job. And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, That's right. That's the NFL for you. They don't mess around. Yeah, I love that inside, that more of that inside stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get the bad and the dumb coming up next.
I got to tell you, Tony, the bad is going to hit you a little closer to
all
home.
All right. I'm waiting for it.
A little personal for you.
I'm waiting for it. All right, we'll come back. Coming up next, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. 2008 is where we're going back to Tiger Woods Rocco Media at U.S. Open. All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. Real quick, I did see the trailer for Quarterbacks. You sent it to me. It's good.
It does. It's what a trailer's supposed to do.
Right. It's supposed to get you enticed and
but
interested.
There are a few little tidbits in there. You're like, this actually does look interesting.
Yeah. I'm
now, it could flame out, easily.
Yeah, no doubt.
You can get into it and like, oh, I've seen this before. Just different characters.
All right. What is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, which, Tony, I know is personal to you.
Okay.
Because they released the SEC schedule for 2024.
They did.
And there is one school in particular that won't face any of their traditional rivals.
Uh-oh. Who is that?
South Carolina.
Oh, how devastating.
So in 2024, South Carolina will not face Georgia, Florida, or Tennessee, which are all schools they have faced since joining in 1992.
Yeah.
Now, if you ask those schools, South Carolina's not the rival.
No. Not one of those teams is interested in carrying the tradition of facing Gamecock football.
Yeah.
South Carolina, for a long time, they had a schedule that had it, and this was during the Werfel Manning years, especially, where it was they would play Florida, Tennessee, and Clemson. And they, it was the, called the Orange Crush schedule because all those teams have orange in their color, and they would get destroyed by those teams. Werfel would throw 50 on them. Manning would throw up 50 on them, and they would find a way to lose to Clemson, which wasn't awesome, but they would lose. It was devastating. And you'd have a good season. Like you'd have a, you know, Brad Scott would have a team playing pretty well, but then they'd get to that part of the schedule and just kill them, absolutely kill them. Now, that's really sad, especially the Florida one. I loved – my wife and I have a flag in our house that's split between Florida and South Carolina. We do that every year. We have a fun time every year. We have a little bet. She usually wins, but
course.
I've won a few times. Last couple of years I've won. So we've had a really good time with
I
that.
Know.
That's
then
really too bad.
2024 – I mean, 2023, you guys are going to have to go all out.
Yeah.
This
year,
you guys are going to have to go all out and say, you know, hey, we gotta do something huge because it's not a guarantee anymore.
I have been invited twice since I've lived in Nashville to go to Tennessee to see South Carolina play, but I usually couldn't go because I had youth sports, or it's a 3.5 hour drive and a 3.5 hour drive back on a Saturday, and I'm like, I'm not gonna do it. But I've thought about it. I've thought about wanting to go see them play Tennessee. So it is kind of too bad. But as we talked about yesterday, that those are in order to protect other ones that are valuable. These are the ones that you sometimes you got to have to give these up.
And you know, unfortunately, South Carolina's on the wrong end of this. I think, though, that you guys need to travel to South Carolina. It's October. You and your wife need to, because now that you're empty nesters, October 14th.
To Florida game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that should be something that you guys should probably plan on doing that. Say, you know, let's just take a weekend. We're going to go to South Carolina. We're going to watch. I don't think it'll be the last time ever, but it's not a yearly thing anymore.
The one that hurts the most is Georgia, because they played Georgia when they were an independent. So when they were an independent, they played Georgia, because it's right down the road. It's right across. It's not that far to Athens from Columbia. So that's just crushing. That's too bad. And but
the SEC did get, you know, they did do other things right. I mean, Texas will play against Texas A&M for the first time in God knows how long.
I used to love that rivalry, and I had nothing to do with it. I used to respect it a lot.
Yeah.
It was, you know, Texas-Oklahoma was one thing, but Texas-Texas A&M was something completely
battle
fantastic.
For Texas.
Yeah.
That's back on the schedule. And then, obviously, you know, Iron Bowl is still intact.
Georgia-Alabama are going to play in 2024, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be awesome. So, you know, but look, there are just South Carolina, Missouri, South Carolina. Those are the two. You got Texas, Oklahoma now, there are a couple of other schools that just joined. Texas A&M joined, Missouri joined. When South Carolina joined they've been in the conference for 20-30 years, but you know, you're just okay. My overriding point is this. You have Georgia Auburn, right? It's the oldest rivalry in the South. They've been playing since the 1800s. South Carolina can't participate in that if you've only joined the conference the past 30 years, right? Like, when you're talking about a century worth of football against each other, like, whenever Alabama and Tennessee play, there's pictures of, like, the 1930s of these two schools playing. Like, South Carolina is not part of that. They're not – there's nobody sitting on a porch – somewhere in Beaufort County going, man, I remember the 1937 game against Florida. Well, we were down 2 touchdowns. We came roaring back. It's just a beautiful night in Columbia where Chipper Williamson scored from 3 yards out. We knocked the Gators out of the chance to win the SEC title. There's nobody doing that in the state of South Carolina, not from Charleston to Pickens to anywhere else in that state. That they've only been in the conference for 30 years. However, I can drive to some peanut farm in Georgia, and I can find a 95-year-old guy who can tell me about the 1922 battle between Georgia and Auburn. How about that?
Why does it have to be a peanut farmer,
right?
Tony? What are you trying to say?
You know what I'm saying? I can find these people. I can find these people all over the South. I can find some guy in Oxford, Mississippi, who can tell me about the time in 1947 they beat LSU at the buzzer. Like, I can find these people. South Carolina, I can't. I can't find them. because they've only been in the conference for 30 years. So that's the problem. So if you're the SEC, those are the guys you're trying to keep happy.
Yes.
You know, those are the guys you're trying to – you're trying to make sure that they die in peace, knowing the third Saturday in October is still going to be around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you think about it, if South Carolina said, hey, we're leaving, the SEC would be like, all right.
Yeah. All right. Great. It was nice knowing you for a while.
Thanks for showing up. I mean, exactly. We're really going to miss that South Carolina market that you guys haven't really been able to corner.
But here's the rule in the South. Here's the rule in the Southeastern Conference. If your first game against an opponent can be seen as a color photograph, you're not that relevant to the SEC. All right? The first picture, you have to have played before cameras were even a thing. That's how old some of these rivalries are. I better see black and white grainy video of the first time you guys ever played against each other, if video even existed. But if I can showcase your first game in the conference when Clinton was president of the United States, that's not exactly a deep-rooted thing.
No.
So,
and it seems like it was a long time ago.
It does.
It does seem like, you know, when you're talking 1992, I mean, that is 30 years ago. To some, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, way back in the 1990s? Like, yeah. No, that's... nothing compared to when these guys used to face off against each other in leather helmets.
Yeah, leather helmets.
No face mask.
No flight. No human flight.
Yeah.
Like, things like that. Yeah, that's how old these things are. So, yeah, now that does make me kind of sad. All right, do you want to get to the dumb and carry it over?
We can get to the dumb and carry it over.
Okay, sure.
This is one of my favorite stories I've seen, and it went viral upon viral yesterday.
All right.
A Belgian man named David Bereton, I'm probably butchering his last name.
Okay.
Faked his own death.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I love fake death stories.
Before turning up at his funeral, and the whole reason for doing this was to teach his family a lesson about staying in touch.
Oh, now that, okay, so he wasn't trying to get away from a mafia prosecution, something terrible.
He faked his death, and then his family went all boo-hoo, and they went to social media, you know, crying, it was too soon, you were going to be a grandfather, you had many years to come, all the things that, you know, family members will say about you if you died too soon. And so he faked his death. And he showed up to his funeral, Tony, in a helicopter.
Oh, how great. Oh, this is my new hero.
Yeah.
Did he have money? Like, did he? Obviously, he didn't have a helicopter. I mean,
he himself is a TikTok influencer. I guess that's what he's doing. I mean, he's older.
Does he have money where the kids went, let's talk to the lawyer?
Was
he worried about that?
I don't think he's worried about the money. I don't think there was like, hey, they're going to split up his inheritance. And they were all excited, like somebody was already planning on buying a house with something like that.
Can you fake your death in 2023 and make it work?
Apparently, yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously this guy came back. But what I mean is, let's say the IRS was after you, or the FBI was after you,
right,
or the mob was after you, and you blew up a car and there was a body inside that they couldn't identify, but they just assumed it was you, and you just disappeared into the Amazon. Like, could you do it, do you think? Or do you think it's impossible? You won't be able to do it.
I mean, yeah, I guess you would have to fake your death in a plane crash, but you jumped out successfully.
Yeah, something like that.
And just never resurfaced.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's...
Oh, pulling off a little D.B. Cooper action where you parachute and then nobody finds you?
And you can still have an account full of money in the Cayman Islands, right?
That's true.
That's still untouchable?
Yeah. All right, we'll talk about that coming up next. All right. And
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Sports Map Radio. It is a throwback Thursday today, so 2008, and we've been talking about Tiger Woods and the U.S. Open of 2008 at Torrey Pines. U.S. Open starts today at L.A. Country Club. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find all your favorites at the lowest price at Total Wine. Total Wine has been the best for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and more. Drink responsibly. B21. All right, so I was asking this question if you could fake your death, right? And the reason I ask this is because I remember, did you see Ozark on Netflix?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so there's a scene in Ozark. I'm not giving anything away here, but there's a scene in Ozark where he has $3 million in cash in a duffel bag, and it gets stolen. And he finds sort of these local kids, this local family has stolen it. And he basically, Jason Bateman in his Jason Bateman way, by the way, I think is my favorite actor. I seem to consume everything Jason Bateman is in. He says to them, he goes, what you basically have here is gas money and groceries. Like, you can't buy a car. You can't buy a house. Like, you're going to be on everybody's radar with this kind of money. It's basically implying you can't just spend this money on stuff. So if you fake your death, you're going to have to get a new identity. You're going to have to get new bank accounts. You're going to have to be in a world where you're untraceable.
Yeah.
Like you have to be off the grid, but you can't, you have to be completely, like, there's no way electronically for people to find out it's you, in other words. And I'm wondering if that's more trouble than it's worth in the modern underground crime world.
I think it is, because I think because you're going to leave a digital footprint somewhere.
Yeah. Like, does witness protection program, does that work? Does that work today?
Right.
Like, could a person who really wants to find you, could they find you? Right. Yeah, I know. In TV and movies, this is the thing. Hollywood makes us think about realities that may not exist.
Well, and then when you watch it,
there may be a guy in the witness protection program going, it's almost impossible. This is really hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, you watch it too. It's like, how does that even work? You know, I mean, you had to plop them down in a neighborhood where nobody knows, has ever seen anything about you ever.
Ever, right. If I'm living in my house and my next door neighbor there's a family and I go over and say hi and they go, yeah, we just moved in. And I go, oh, how you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And then just something like that. I wouldn't think twice that they're on the run from the mafia, right? Like, it's not always like what Steve Martin was doing in My Blue Heaven, where he was this over Italian stereotype in San Diego. But at the same time, if I would be watching Unsolved Mysteries or something, or some article popped up and I went, that looks like Bob. That looks like Bob and Carol. That looks like Bob and Carol and little Annie. Like, I would be like, that didn't take long for me to pop, figure that out. So if you are in the process of faking your own death, God bless you. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's got to be nearly impossible to pull it off. Unless you want to go to, like, Peru or something. Isn't Jesse Ventura, isn't he, like, brags about how he's off the grid when he's in Mexico all the time? I feel like every time I hear about Jesse Ventura, he's always talking about how he's off the grid in Baja. Do you want to be off the grid? Like, there are things about social media and the internet that I obviously don't like. I think a lot of us don't like it, but there's things I would have a hard time living without.
Right. No, that's the thing, right? I mean,
you know what I mean?
I guess, the more I'm thinking about it, as long as you have, I guess if you were like Andy Dufresne, I'm going to use him for example, because he created an entire persona in a way, right? I mean, he created a bank alias, and since it was his signature that matched, I mean, it was easy back, well, I guess, where that film was, when he escaped.
50s and 60s.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, if you have a way to access money under an alias, and if you move to a completely new area, and you would never be allowed to set foot in the United States again.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't mean the bad guys can't find you. You know what I mean? But I mean, still, it's.
But if, like,
but
you
I mean,
said,
I think of, I like think of, said, like, Whitey were... Bulger. Like, Whitey Bulger finally got caught. Like, in the end, he was on the run forever and ever, and they finally caught him.
Yeah. Wasn't there a guy, like, in Northern California or something like that, who'd been on the run for years and they finally caught him, but he was like in his 80s.
Yeah. Whitey Bulger was a guy like that. They found him.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying recently.
Southern California. But
I'm saying there was a guy recently.
Probably. Yeah.
Came forward.
If they're always looking for you, they'll there's just people, that's what they do. They just constantly are on the lookout for any sign that you might, of any tips that you might be living in a certain area.
But that would be the weird thing, right? I mean, if you know, you were saying, you know, before, like if you're ditching or dodging the IRS or something like that, and you decided to move to another country so that way they didn't take half your money. Just, I guess, you know, the knowledge of knowing that you can't re-enter ever.
If I was running from the mob or something like that, I would be the guy in the bar drunk, yelling my story out to people.
Right.
Like, but anyway, somehow this guy is telling us he's, you know, he was an accountant for Bill the Butcher.
Right.
That's my big mouth. I wouldn't be able to keep myself a secret. Are you kidding? One other note I did want to get to from, because we're doing the good, the bad, and the dumb. I don't know if this is good. I don't know if this is bad, and I don't know if this is dumb. I guess it depends on your own taste. But there is a rumor out there that Wheel of Fortune is in negotiations with Ryan Seacrest.
I did bring that up. I was going to bring that up, but I didn't know where to fit it either.
Yeah, like some people like Ryan Seacrest. Some people don't like him, and some people couldn't care less. So it's either good, bad, dumb, however you want to put it.
Right.
But here's the problem with it is that you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. But if you're Ryan Seacrest, I don't know if that matters. You can say, like, hey, man, I'm big enough. It's my own thing.
Yeah, you look at, you know, the guys who have followed Alex Trebek. What was it? Maim Bialik and Ken Jennings.
Right.
Both of them have been screwed. There was another guy, remember, but they immediately got rid of him.
They immediately got rid of him.
There was, like, some controversy, which they probably made up.
Right, right.
Just said, let's have the guy who follows the guy, and then we'll just make up a story and get him out and pay
well,
him off.
Well, let's say Wheel of Fortune was like, you know what? We're going to take an unknown, and we're going to groom him for this role. And they went, we're going to get Tony D to do it. And they called me up and they said, you want to be Wheel of Fortune? I went, yeah. I would be barbecued the second no matter how good it was. Like, people could watch it and go, he did a good job, but they're still going to rip me to pieces because I'm not Pat Sajak. So you need, because you're not Pat Sajak, there's nothing you can do about it. You can be good. You can have no difference at all. You could just be just a different person and the show could run smoothly.
You could be a Pat Sajak impersonator.
Exactly. But because you're not Pat Sajak, people are going to hate you. But if you're Ryan Seacrest, you're almost immune to that because you're like, look, I'm Ryan Seacrest for crying out loud. I do 70 different projects.
Right.
Like I don't care if you hate me on Wheel of Fortune.
What's I'm working a guy that's, four I'm, more days a month?
Exactly. But here's the other problem that why – if you're Ryan Seacrest, here's the deal. Part of being a game show host is that you get all this time off to relax and just live the good life. You don't need to be doing Countdown, a radio show, a TV program, American Idol. Don't fill your life with 100 things when you're when you get a game show host, you get to be like, hey, it's 4 days a month.
Yeah.
How great is this job? Not, it's one more thing I got to add to my extremely busy, awful schedule.
No, I mean, he...
Where I don't sleep.
He, I know he hosts a radio show in the morning in LA in Kiss FM. It's the, but he's the morning drive guy. So you do that and then you pop over to television studio.
Well, wasn't he living in New York where he was doing that with that? Is he stopping doing that?
Because he was
doing
that stopped, with, you know, with what's Kelly Ripa.
Yeah. But he was living in New York. So he was doing the show from New York.
Right.
To LA, which adds a little more time, you know, but. Then, but he was doing, he does this New Year's Eve stuff. He does, I mean, he's American Idol, all that stuff. He does it all over the place.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I always remind people this. Pat Sajak left once before, and the guy that hosted the show was Rolf Benerska, former Chargers kicker.
So maybe that's what they need to do.
So that's what they need to do. They need to go and find a kicker.
What's Nate Kading up to?
Rolf Benerska was the kicker that won the Chargers the game of the century, the playoff game against the Dolphins.
Right.
Where Kellen Winslow had to be dragged off the field so hot and humid. Him and Uwe von Schaman were the two kickers in that game, and Benerska's made field goal in double overtime was the one that lifted them to the AFC title game. And then he got the job when Pat Sajak decided to do a night talk show. He jumped in and was the Wheel of Fortune host. How awesome is that? So, how would you like a resume of that? I was the kicker that ended the game of the century, and I replaced Pat Sajak for a very brief period of time when he left to go do something else and came back to Wheel of Fortune.
The only problem with that resume, though, is that, you know, it's literally, what have you done for me lately?
Right. That's right.
It's nothing.
Nothing. There you go. So I don't know how people feel about Seacrest saying, no W, no W. Denise, spin again. They're not going to happen. Maybe happen. I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, coming up hour three, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Good throwback Thursday to you as we continue.